Hi everyone, it's Kevin J, the best thing since rain, and you're listening to Therapy Suite right here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. This week, I speak to Veterans Growth Charity CEO, Sarah Wilson. We'll be discussing about veterans and how horticultural therapy and transitioning to normal life happens. Sarah, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you for having me.
And thank you for your time. Sarah, I think it'd be brilliant to hear a bit about your background and you know how you got to where you are.
Yeah, so I started out in publishing a long time ago in London, and I did what I think a lot of people who work in London do, and that is just get kind of chewed up and spat out by it. And I got to about early 30s and I thought, okay, I need a change. So I moved to East Sussex, which is very rural, and I retrained in gardening, and I started out doing maintenance gardening, which is basically just going to people's houses, cutting lawns, you know, pruning roses, that sort of thing. And then I decided that maybe that physically that was quite demanding, so I then took a diploma in garden design at the London College of Garden Design, and through that just kind of expanded my way out into horticulture and did lots of different things such as writing and lecturing, became interested in all aspects of horticulture. And I met my partner at the time, who was in the army, and he actually had, whilst he was still serving in the army, he had a bilateral stroke, which eventually led to him being medically discharged from the army. But along the way, he didn't have a great experience in terms of his care, either from the military or from the NHS or from other military charities. And I think that I was shocked, because I'd always assumed that, you know, you think the police and all those kind of, you know, services are very good employers and that they look after their employees. So I was really shocked at the level of care that he received. And I was also shocked. I wasn't shocked about the NHS side of it, sadly, because I'd had relatives who'd been ill, and kind of I dealt with the shortcomings of the NHS in, you know, their various guises. But I think he was more shocked than I was, because the military had been like his family, and he expected better from them when he got seriously ill. And ditto, I think, the military charities, you know, they're, at the time, I think it's changed now. I think people have become more wary of charities in general. But I think at the time, people really felt that, you know, they were doing excellent work and they were supporting veterans. And actually, in practice, that wasn't necessarily the case, or it certainly wasn't what he found. And he also got quite depressed because of his illness. And he was paying a lot of close attention to the number of veteran suicides in the UK, and also I think in the US, and he was literally on a daily basis monitoring those suicides. And so, you know, he got very, very down, and I'm one of those very sort of pragmatic and practical people. And I said to him, well, you know, you can either continue to monitor this and get further and further depressed by it, or you can do something about it. You know, what's it going to be? And he said, yeah, you know, you're right, I'm going to actually do something about this. So he set up a charity called Veterans Growth. And I, because of my interest in horticulture, also kind of fed into it from its inception, because I set up the side of it that's, you know, the main part of what we do in terms of activities, which is the gardening side. So that's how I kind of came into my role, you know, in a sort of indirect manner, but in terms of horticulture, we knew it worked. Particularly Jason knew it worked, because when he'd had his stroke, he did gardening at an army rehabilitation center, and he'd found it very therapeutic. And also when he left the military, he set up a plant shop, and he used to work in there every day and spent a lot of time playing with plants and, you know, caring for them. And I think he realized the benefits of just being surrounded by greenery and, you know, just being up close and personal with plants, which, you know, some people sound surprising, but they are very, you know, it's a very restful environment. You know, it kind of makes you slow down, makes you be more mindful. So, yeah, I think he saw the benefits. And so together we founded Veterans Growth, and, you know, it's kind of developed into what it is today.
Brilliant. And you're right. I mean, I think nature, anything natural, is going to be good for us, isn't it? Because I think it's in our DNA from, like, you know, caveman and cavewoman time, you know, being out in the nature. And I think I've done some other shows before about nature and flowers, and mental well-being wise, they tend to help people a lot.
Yeah, I think that probably you're right. I suspect that innately we just identify with plants and the natural world because going back over a long period of time, that's been our environment. It's only very recently that we've kind of shut ourselves indoors and disconnected from it. And I think that, yeah, when you do get back outside, there's something, like you say, in your DNA almost that's connecting you and allows you to read a landscape, to read patterns as well. You know, there's a lot of it that just comes naturally. And, you know, evidence has shown that it is beneficial to mental health and well-being. You know, it started out that there was not a great deal of evidence around that, but there's more and more being done all the time, particularly in the States, but also in the UK now. And it is proven that, you know, being outdoors in the fresh air, being surrounded by the colour green, you know, breathing in the smells, absorbing the kind of chemicals you find in the soil, all of those things are now proven to be beneficial for you.
Absolutely. Let's start by talking about what is Veterans Growth?
So Veterans Growth is a charity. We're a registered charity. We got going in 2019. It was very serendipitous. We were looking for a patch of land. Well, no, actually we had a patch of land, but it was very small. And we happened to have a chance conversation with somebody who knew a landowner who had bought this farm, but actually didn't have any set plans for it. And she'd been in discussions with him to set up something of her own there, but they couldn't agree terms. So we met up with him, had a look around the site. He loved what we were proposing to do. And he said, okay, I will let you have 5 acres of land and all the buildings, and I'll charge you a peppercorn rent. So we have all these amazing facilities for, you know, a fund for essentially nothing. So that worked out incredibly well and allowed us to, I suppose, really expand a lot quicker than we would have done had we, you know, started as most charities do without those advantages. So, yeah, essentially we're based in East Sussex in the UK, and we do horticultural therapy with military veterans. We're actually branching out to help other people as well, because we have such a great resource here in terms of the size of the place and, you know, the growing areas and things. And we offer a program of activities. We started out doing a 12-week course, and so people would come and have a very structured formal program, and we would work on different aspects of their mental health each session. But actually, as time went by, we realized that, you know, people they don't fit into a schedule necessarily. So we changed it, and actually we made it so that people could come and do more of what they felt like doing on the day. And also, because we're outdoors, we're weather dependent, you know, we're season dependent. You just never know what you're going to get with horticulture. It's very fluid in terms of what's happening on site on the day. So yeah, we adapted it, and now we have people that come kind of as and when they feel like. So it may be that a 12-week course works for them. It might be that they come for a 2-week break. We've got accommodation here so people can stay. It might be that they come for a morning's workshop. They might come for an intensive 1 week where they do 5 days. Or they might, like some of our people, have been coming for 4 years, and they'll come and go, and they'll use us as and when they need us. So yes, there isn't really a structure to the programme of activities as such. There is a programme in as much as, you know, we know when somebody comes, if they're presenting with a particular mood, we might know that those activities are going to be beneficial for them, so we'll assign them to them on the day. And we know which activities encourage certain things, like, you know, some people we work with, we're looking to improve their motor skills, so that we might, you know, we'll have activities that we can do around that. But yeah, we're very, very flexible, and we are lucky, and I know this isn't the case for a lot of bigger charities because they have to fit into certain programs of activity, but we're really lucky in that we're flexible and we work very much with the individual as they come to us.
I know you set up around 2019. And obviously, we unfortunately had the effects of COVID. Did that affect the charity in any way at all?
Well, we got the keys, and then straight away we went into lockdowns. it was kind of a blessing, because Jason and I came over to the charity every day, and we took that time to set up the site as it was at the time. And we actually had some people who came down, some landscapers, and they came down and actually put the polytunnel up for us, and they camped in their van. So thank you, DJR Landscapes, for that. So yeah, they came down and were able to kind of isolate away from us, stick the polytunnel up and then go. And we also then managed to open up sort of between the lockdowns and have individuals on site. During that time, though, we were doing sort of digital support for people, and we were sending around newsletters. And we also had a postal service set up so that if anyone wanted seeds and to try growing at home, we would send out a little starter pack to them. Because I think a lot of people got very much into gardening during lockdown because it was really nothing else to do. So, yes, it wasn't great. You know, it would have been nice to hit the ground and just open the doors and go. But we did manage to actually keep going, which was really good, because a lot of people didn't, and a lot of charities did actually, you know, kind of withdraw support at that time. And actually, that was the time when it was really, really needed. People were really struggling, you know, with isolation and poor mental health. So yes, it was good. We managed to kind of get through it okay.
That's fantastic. How long did it take to set up?
Not huge amounts of time, really, because it was as simple as... So we operate a system called No Dig, which means that we don't dig the soil. We basically layer cardboard, some sort of mulch, and that might be wood chip, that might be, you know, compost, it could be green waste, and you layer that on top of your cardboard. Then you put a layer of good soil on it and you plant straight into it. And the plant roots just go down into the soil. You don't need to prep it. You don't need to deturf. You don't need to rotivate. All those things that people think you need to do to get good soil, you don't need to do that with the no-dig method. So we literally just marked out, I think we had 10 beds on the ground to start with. We built some raised beds during lockdown, filled those up with soil, managed to get a delivery of soil, and and away we went. So, it's kind of every year we add on another load of beds, in accordance with how many people we've got coming. And so we just kind of managed to spread the growing area out each year. And we've added, you know, fruit cage, pond, a cold frame. We've added like mounds where we plant wildflowers. So gardening is really easy and really cheap. The biggest part of it, I suppose, is the labour involved. But yeah, it was very easy to set it up, actually.
That's fantastic. And it sounds like you've done so much in the last, what was it, 5 years now? Well, kind of 4 years and that kind of thing, you know. We're just going to a quick ad break and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
So Sarah, thank you for telling us a bit about the charity and how it got started and that kind of thing. I know you've covered a little bit about what you offer. Is it okay if you go into a bit more detail about what's offered?
Yeah. So I think probably if I give you some examples of what happens day to day, that might give more of an insight. So I was talking about people with their moods and how they might present on the day. So quite often the people that come to us have sleeping problems, and it might be they've had a really sleepless night. And I'm thinking of one person in particular who does who's got a very, very stressful role at home and also works shift work. So when he comes, there have been occasions where he's just laid down on the grass and gone to sleep in the sunshine, and that is exactly what he needed to do that day, and that, you know, that helped him out. And it's just that chance to switch off as well from all the other pressures that he's got going on. So it's really not at all rocket science, and we're not doing anything clever other than assessing somebody and treating them as they need to be treated on the day, which I think is kind of a combination of our skills in horticultural therapy, but also, you know, empathy and ability to recognise what another human being needs. So I'm very lucky because I've got an amazing team who've got backgrounds in, well, all sorts of things like anthropology and OT and NHS mental health.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I've got this kind of multifaceted team of people who are really caring, and they're very good at assessing someone on the day. So another example might be somebody's come in and they've had a fight with their partner on the phone on the way in, and they're really stressed. And we've said to them, tell you what you need to do today, you need to get that shovel, get the wheelbarrow and barrow a load of compost over, and they'll charge up and down until they're absolutely worn out. And then they'll kind of have a cup of tea and a chat with others, and they'll go, I just needed that. I needed to get that out of my system. Or we've got somebody at the moment who's had a stroke and is struggling to use their left arm. And so they've been doing a lot of cooking, and which is a particular interest of theirs, or was pre-stroke. And also they've been doing things like green woodworking. So that has, I think, not only does it get them to, it encourages them to use that arm, but it also gives them the confidence that they can use it, where I think they have massively lost that. So again, we're very lucky because we have such a range of activities that take place here. So we have somebody who comes in and does cooking, as I mentioned, and they'll use the produce from the site. We've got somebody who comes in and does natural dyeing, and she's helping a veteran learn stitching because he wants to build a tent and live in it. We have, you know, people who do basket weaving. We've got somebody who comes in and does green woodworking. So that's, you know, carving and wood turning. We've also got a patch of land that we manage, which is woodland. So we can actually send veterans down to the woodland to harvest the wood that they're going to be using in the green woodworking. And it might be somebody has a particular aptitude for something. So one of our more long-term veterans, he comes and he loves woodworking. So he's now working alongside our expert green woodworker and is learning lots of skills that he'll then be able to pass on to other veterans. So, you know, once someone's been here a while, sometimes it's useful to develop them into kind of a, you know, a lived experience mentor for other veterans who come. And that's how we progress their role. So, yes, and it depends what people are interested in individually. So we have someone who comes at the moment who's very, very into clean eating and wants to grow their own food. So we are teaching them the skills to grow things from seed, when to harvest, what to put where. So, yes, it's so varied. And, you know, I could probably go on all day giving you different examples, but it's around the framework of horticulture, which is so varied. You can't possibly not find something that interests anyone. I don't think I've ever had anyone turn up who didn't enjoy it and didn't find something that piqued their curiosity, because there's just so many things to do. And we're so willing to let people try and find what, you know, what fires them up and what interests them.
Absolutely. You know what's brilliant about what you've set up? It almost sounds like a bit of like rehab work with people that have gone through some, you know, health changes.
Yes, it is. I mean, I suppose essentially, yes, it is. I was going to say that's probably beyond our remit. And I think, you know,
it's fantastic. I mean, I'm just trying to highlight how brilliant, yeah, I think that is.
I mean, I think maybe we do end up doing things that aren't our core offering because there is gaps in service from other places. I mean, sometimes we end up helping people who are homeless. Sometimes we end up helping people with addictions. I mean, that is part of our remit because we've trained in smart recovery. So we actually offer services around addiction now, but we might help somebody with schooling for their child. We also support families and partners, and sometimes we're mediating between the client and their partner if a relationship's broken down. Again, because we're small and flexible and we're working with individuals face to face, we can signpost and we can advocate and we can sometimes, you know, offer our help on their behalf if they're struggling to access other services. I mean, we have someone who comes who can't use, who can't complete online forms. So we've kind of helped with, you know, their PIP assessments and things like that. So yes, we do try, because at the end of the day, you know, if we're not helping somebody kind of, if we're not delivering a bigger picture thing, you know, if somebody just comes to us and we say, well, we're sorry, we can only help you dig a bed over, you know, I don't know how useful that is. And in the future, that it would be nice if we could stick to that, because that's what we're here for. But sadly, with the, you know, the state of the NHS and, you know, kind of various other services that should be there, but sometimes aren't or have long waiting lists, then sometimes we're kind of firefighting. We're at the coalface. We're just dealing with stuff.
How do people refer to your services?
Well, they can either self-refer, and actually I think most of our people do self-refer. A lot of people find us online or on social media, and they can get in touch directly, and we can take them in pretty much straight away. We've got the capacity to do that, and we always try and make space for people. And otherwise they'll come through the NHS, through the OpCourage, which is the NHS service for veterans, or they'll come from other military charities like SAFA. We're going to be doing some work with Help for Heroes, hopefully, in the future. RBL, people like that. So, yeah, basically anywhere, as long as somebody served for at least one day in the military, and that includes national service and training. And a lot of people don't realise that, but that's our criteria. We're happy to work with someone.
And it sounds like you work with people from all different situations and backgrounds, and it sounds like more or less anyone can, you know, seek help from your services. Would that be right?
Yes, anyone that's been in the military certainly is, you know, is free to get in touch at any time. In terms of other kind of communities, I would say that if it was a more wider mental health issue they were dealing with, we would probably deal with an organisation. So at the moment we're working with an organisation which is fairly close block by, and they deal with more generalised mental health issues. But and so we have a specific group, and they've kind of done the assessment part and said, we think these members of our group will be suitable for this programme. So they've sent them along. Certainly military members can get in touch, yeah.
I think it's fantastic, I think. And you mediate with people and their relationships, is that right?
We have done, yeah. When things have got that bad, because what we find is that people who come here feel very safe here, and they get on very well with the team. And there have been times when, you know, they've kind of turned up in tears. They've had they've had a marriage breakdown, and it's got to the point where things just can't be resolved. And they've asked us to speak with a partner. And I think that it's good. You know, we don't obviously say anything without their permission. We don't discuss anything without their permission. You know, generally they're here when we're talking to the partner. But it's just to reassure the partner, A, that the person is where they say they are, because that's an issue sometimes. There might be a breakdown of trust, and the partner says, well, I don't believe you're going somewhere that's helpful. I think you're, you know, off doing this X, Y, and Z. Or it's the fact that, you know, the person feels very safe and secure around us, and it takes the sting out of a conversation that might otherwise get heated. And the other thing that why we like to involve families and we like to be in contact with them is that we, like I said, we're not just here for the veteran. We're also here for their family members, because at the end of the day, if the veteran can get well, then that's going to have a beneficial impact on their families as well. And I think a lot of the time, and I experienced this myself as the partner of Jason when he had his stroke, you know, I was totally shut out by the military. I couldn't contact him when he went missing, basically, the night he had his stroke. He was in Edinburgh and I was in East Sussex. And I couldn't actually reach him, and I couldn't contact the army to find out where he was, and they wouldn't have disclosed anything to me. And I couldn't get any word on his care because they totally excluded me, because we weren't married. I don't know whether that made a difference, but, you know, it was just, you know, I was completely, there was a brick wall there. There was no contact. And I felt very excluded because I was having to deal with stuff, you know, at home or in the hospitals and things, but getting no support at all from the military. And I didn't want any other family member to feel excluded from a veteran's journey, because it's not helpful. You know, if you can't be part of it, you don't understand what's happening necessarily. You know, you might feel completely shut out. So I think it's really, really good that the family members can feel part of it, because then they understand why the veteran comes, what's happening when they're here, why it might be beneficial. And I think if they buy into it as much as the veteran does, then there's that support at home. But yeah, we do kind of, there have been times when we've had to step in and, you know, kind of, and just be the voice of reason, really, on the end of the phone.
Absolutely. We're just going to another quick ad break and we'll be right back. UK Health Radio.
Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So Sarah, thank you for showing, you know, telling us a bit about your services and what you provide and, you know, the varied number of people that you support as well. What would you say are some of the benefits of horticultural therapy?
I mean, I guess I've touched on a fair few, but there is just, I think, without getting too kind of airy-fairy, you know, it is just as simple as people come here, they walk up a ramp into the garden and, you know, a lot of them will just sigh and go, oh, like they look around and you can see this kind of like this relief, this just sheer happiness to be in a place that is so open. You know, we've got a fantastic view at, we look across green fields and some woodland and some sheep, and it's just very green. It's very peaceful. It's very rural. And I think you can't underestimate the impact of that for somebody who lives in a city, particularly to just get outside in the countryside. It's a real big thing, you know, it's a benefit in itself. But yes, so it's being out in the fresh air, which is great because quite often, as I said, people have trouble with sleeping. If they come here, if they do some manual work, if they get in the fresh air, that can just be enough to have, you know, effectively worn you out in a nice way. And so you may well sleep better at the end of the day. You've got the social aspect of coming here. So when we have veterans here, they can communicate with other veterans. And a big problem, this is not necessarily a horticultural therapy thing, but it's certainly, you know, something that we find here. So veterans can quite often have trouble transitioning from veteran life to civilian life. So, you know, there's that little cornerstone when they come here that they can still have that little veteran community. They can share in jokes. They can talk about experiences that they might not necessarily be able to in the civilian community. And so there's that part of it. There is the physical side of it, you know, like you were saying about the rehab side. Sometimes it is just good to get out to do a bit of physical stuff. You know, it's good for your health. There's the nutrition aspect of it. So we're quite big on growing food. And when people come here, we'll get them to sow seeds and we'll get them to harvest what they've grown. And then we've started to introduce cooking lessons so people can actually cook what they've grown as well. And so there's that whole thing of identifying the link between what goes in the ground, when it grows, how you cook it, eating it, and then the effect of that on your mental health, because nutrition is linked to mental health. And if we can kind of get that relationship up and running and in a positive way, then that's a good thing. I'm trying to think what else. We have pigs here. They're pet pigs. They're not for eating. But even that is just fun and people love to see them. You know, it makes it feel like a farm and it's something that you wouldn't necessarily experience in the real world. Watching the seasons change, watching plants grow is a great activity for mindfulness and for reminding you kind of of your place in the world, really. You know, that there's that whole thing that the cycles of life are manifesting here in the garden and people are witnessing that. And I think it does help them make sense of the whole cycle of their own lives. You know, there's a seasonal thing. There's just, you know, noticing wildlife. You can be here and you can watch butterflies and birds and insects. And there's that whole thing that, again, connecting you back to nature, slowing you down, making you think about something other than yourself. You know, it helps you switch off your mind. There's loads of things that we do where it's quite sort of repetitive actions and it just quietens the mind when it's being done. So potting on particularly is good for that. So I'm sure I've missed off millions of things, but yes, it's a fantastic activity in all aspects, really.
What are the key challenges you see with vets transitioning to civilian life?
I mean, I may be speaking, I'm going to speak personally, and it might not be the case for everyone. So I stand to be corrected, but I would say that, you know, when in the military, there's very much a family when you go in and you're part of that family for the entire time you're in the military. And that, I think, that sense of family establishes very quickly because of the whole process of training. And I suspect, I've never been through it, but I suspect that is geared to make you feel like you're part of a unit. That unit is, you know, is tight, and if that comes above everything else, you know. And I think when people leave the military, they suddenly realise actually that that family has been taken away, and they're quite often thrust into the real world with no idea of what to expect. And even in as much as you may have been, you know, addressed in a certain way when you were in the military, when you leave the military, nobody in the civilian world recognises that. They won't automatically give you respect, because to them you're another civilian. And so I think that comes as a bit of a shock to the system. And I think that there's maybe not the framework of kind of retraining and adjustment that's needed from the military to civilian life. I think they don't think that civilians understand them. They think civilians, you know, are kind of ignorant of what happens in the military, which is, you know, most definitely the case, I'm sure. So, and I think that there's that lack of career. You know, you were always this thing, you identified this way, and then when you leave, all of a sudden, you're all at sea. And I think that in the military, the nature of the beast is that you're not taught to think as an individual, you're part of a unit. So when you come out and you suddenly have to start thinking of yourself and what you actually want from the rest of your life, I think it's really quite shocking for people, and you can be completely at sea. You don't know where to turn, and you have to recover yourself and find out who you are again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, in terms of, it's not just horticultural by the sound of things, as in horticultural therapy, because you provide so many different things, you know, which is brilliant. It sounds like the charity kind of expanded as things started. Is that right? In terms of the level of support?
Yeah, it totally did. It totally evolved from what we thought. And before we started, we did all our research and had great ideas about, you know, based on evidence, what we would offer. And we thought we knew the best way to do things, the correct length of course, you know, what we should be doing in each session. And then when it came to being boots on the ground and dealing with people day in, day out, we suddenly realised that actually we just needed to make adjustments. And, you know, we also try and cater for people if they've got certain interests. So yeah, we do. We end up kind of facilitating lots of people's requirements. And yeah, sometimes I think we do have to rein ourselves in, because we've got a big site, we've got a lot of capability amongst our staff and a lot of interests, and we just love it. And I think most people that come here love it, and they get so into it and so enthusiastic that we think, you know, oh, what can we do next? Oh, let's, you know, we've ended up making apple juice, and we, you know, everyone gets excited and says, oh, we need to buy the apple press and make a, you know, apple juice production line. Or, you know, we might go, oh, this week we absolutely think we need to dig a pond, and, you know, this week we're going to build a camp in the woodland. And, you know, and it's like just giving a bunch of kids like some space and go, what do you want to do? And everyone loves it. So yeah, we do sometimes have to go, right, okay, no, we can't do that. That's just too pushing it too far. But, you know, as long as we've got the resources and the interest and the enthusiasm, and we're not causing any harm, then yeah, we just go for it. We experiment and see what's interesting. And like I said, it's so seasonal that, you know, certain things will be of interest at certain times. So yeah, we like to play, we like to see what makes us happy this week.
That's brilliant. Do you basically, have you had any feedback from people that attend the charity and the support you provide, and has anyone given you any feedback about, you know, how useful they find your services?
Yeah, I mean, actually, that's really an interesting question, because we're so busy delivering services, and like I said, we love what we do. So we sometimes, I think, just have such a good time with everyone that comes that we almost forget the actual importance of it on people's lives. And if they don't tell us, we don't know. But we have had people who've kind of said, when the opportunity has arisen, and it's sometimes, you know, in training circumstances or when we've asked for testimonials or when that somebody's been at a talk, and they will actually, you know, we've had quite a number of people who have said, I would not be here today if it wasn't for Veterans Growth. And You know, that's hugely powerful. And I've had people who've recorded that on video and asked us to present it during talks. And we've had somebody stand up and give a talk to that effect, to explain that, you know, they were seriously considering taking their lives and then they found us. And so when somebody says that, it kind of, you know, we all stop and go, wow, you know, we've now got goosebumps and this is what it's all about, you know, and this is the difference we're making. So it is, yeah, it, we do make, and I tend to be on the modest side, but I really do think we make a huge difference to a lot of people. So, and it's lovely to hear it. And I think we know in some cases it goes without saying, but yeah, we do make a big positive difference for sure.
Sounds it. Are you doing any kind of promotions or anything like that, marketing to, you know, get the charity awareness out there?
We actually won a funding bid to work with a PR company who've done some various bits for us. And I think we're on a free press release service. But actually, you know, apart from our social media, probably marketing and promotion is fairly low down the list, just because, you know, there's actually only three members of staff, and one of them is me. I'm full-time. I've got two part-time members of staff and then somebody else who does kind of freelance work. So, yeah, we end up doing everything ourselves, and that probably is the thing that goes on the back burner, sadly. So it's nice to have the opportunity to talk on things like your radio to get awareness out.
Yeah, no, and thank you. You know, as I said before in the beginning, it's brilliant that you've come on the show, and absolutely, this is definitely a way forwards. Just out of interest, why did you take on the role at Veterans Growth?
I don't think I ever did intentionally. I kind of got roped into it, and then I quickly realised that, so Jason did all the admin side of it, and I quickly realised that actually, although he loved the gardening, he was a bit rubbish at it, so I kind of stepped in and helped and offered advice. And at the time, I had my own business and was quite happy doing that. And then I guess I just got sucked into it, really, and... yeah, and I love it. It was never my intention to be here full time at all. And you know, I don't know whether I'll do it forever, but for now, you know, it's an incredibly rewarding job and I am very, very lucky to do it. And you know, I just feel like I'm in the right place at the right time for now to take the charity onto the next level. And then I will hand the reins over to someone probably as it expands. So yes, it wasn't at all intentional, but you know, it's happened and I'm here and it's all good.
That's brilliant. And what I mean, just from the experience you have now in working in the charity, I'm guessing you've noticed the massive impact mental wellbeing has on people.
Yeah. I mean, it's actually quite scary, I think. And I don't know. I mean, I can only approach it in the way that I know, because when I started gardening, basically it was for my mental health. And, you know, it was just a complete kind of backlash against everything I'd done beforehand in London and working in an office. And gardening was just like my salvation. And I think that I understand the power of getting outside and doing something physical and something in nature and something where you're connected with the natural world. And so, you know, I'm sure there's other ways of helping mental health, but for me, this one's really important. And I think it's so multifaceted because it links in with, like I said, things like nutrition and understanding the environment and understanding society and, you know, helping kind of combat problems around sustainability, all those things that maybe you feel like you're not empowered to do because you're only a tiny, you know, cog in the wheel. But actually gardening is really empowering. So I think that, yes, I think for me, it seems to be a good way of dealing with a lot of issues that people are facing around their mental health and, you know, how they view the world, really.
Absolutely. What do you want people listening to this interview to take away with them?
I really, really would like people to think about, you know, if they don't, I know not everybody gardens, but and not everyone has the luxury of a garden or an outdoor space, but you know, everybody can get out and at least somehow get outdoors, you know, just to kind of breathe in the air, just to see a view. And if you have got the space to maybe grow some, even some herbs on your windowsill, you know, it's an important thing that can spark an interest. It's an important way of taking the power back. You know, you don't have to buy plastic wrapped herbs from the supermarket. You can grow them on your windowsill and you can save yourself quite a bit of money. You know, or you can grow salad. Just grow your salad for a year. It just takes a couple of very tiny window boxes and away you go. You know, and if you've got the space to garden, you know, it's important to connect, to get out there, to grow, to do it, you know, as much as you can in a sustainable way that kind of benefits the environment, that benefits wildlife. You know, and I just think that to kind of view yourself as part of a bigger picture is really important, because it gives you, just gives you a really good perspective on life, I think, and your place in the world.
Absolutely. Sarah, thank you so much for your time. It's been really insightful, and you know, thank you for all the work you're doing with the charity. I think it sounds fantastic, how you're helping veterans and the people, etc. You know, if people want to touch base with you, would that be okay? Would it be okay for you to share your social media links or whichever relevant links?
Yeah, absolutely. So the website is www.veteransgrowth.org. The email address is hello@veteransgrowth.org. And on social media, I think on Facebook, Instagram, we don't do so much on Twitter, but we're at Veterans Growth.
Brilliant. And thank you again for your time.
Thank you.
And thank you to our listeners. You know, you can find me at Gavin J417 on Instagram. Until next time, take care.